Enemies of the People, December 2022. Chapter 9, Imposing Global Control. The principal historical vehicle for the Rothschilds' acquisition of enormous global power was European imperialism, and in particular the dominant British variety. Private financial gain was always the motivating force behind colonialism. Says Ferguson, quote, "The profits of overseas expansion unquestionably flowed to a relatively small elite of investors. Late 19th century imperialism was the political accompaniment to an economic process similar to the globalization of the late 20th century. As leading members of that elite of imperial investors, the Rothschilds' role in British imperialism was substantial." End quote. As he adds, the Rothschilds relied on the physical and legal infrastructures of empires like those of Britain and France to enable and impose their exploitation. Quote, "It is hard to imagine their investments in Burmese ruby mines or New Caledonian nickel mines in the absence of direct European control." End quote. Various euphemisms have been used over the years to describe the violence with which this pillaging was enforced. The Rothschilds played a key part in the British occupation of Egypt, from which they profited in multiple ways, including the lucrative Suez loan and speculation on Egyptian bonds. In the 1880s, when British warships bombarded Alexandria after riots had broken out in the Egyptian city, Alphonse de Rothschild wrote enthusiastically of the establishment of, quote, "law and order," end quote. In 1893, Arthur de Rothschild described the use of murderous force against the Matabele people of southern Africa as, quote, "a sharp engagement, 100 of them having been killed, whilst there was, I'm happy to say, hardly a single casualty on our side," end quote. The main interest for him was that this had resulted in what he called, quote, "a little spurt in the shares," end quote, of his family's business. The deadliest weapon used by the British Empire to impose its rule in Matabeleland and elsewhere was the automatic gun produced by Maxim Nordenfeldt, famously cited by writer Hilaire Belloc as the key to European hegemony. Helpfully, recounts Ferguson, the Rothschilds retained a substantial shareholding in the new Maxim Nordenfeldt company and exerted a direct influence over the firm's management. Quote, "If late 19th century imperialism had its military-industrial complex, the Rothschilds were unquestionably part of it." End quote. The Rothschilds were intimately involved in all aspects of British imperialism, whether in encouraging British intervention in Sudan, issuing £6 million worth of Indian railway shares, securing a highly lucrative ruby mining concession from the British government following the annexation of Burma, or sending a trusted agent to Australia for the gold rush. They benefited from the British annexation of Hong Kong, which opened up possibilities of trade with China, and by 1853 they were in correspondence with a Shanghai-based merchant firm to whom they made regular shipments of silver from Mexico and Europe. In the second half of the 20th century, they were still working closely with the rebranded empire, with N.M. Rothschild participating in an issue of debentures for the Commonwealth Development Finance Company in 1963. But Rothschild interests always went further than the limits of the official British domains, and they were important participants in creating what is sometimes known as the informal empire, which included Latin America. Quigley writes about the process of commercialization and incipient industrialization of Latin American society, which, quote, "was largely a consequence of foreign investments, which introduced railroads, tramlines, faster communications, large-scale mining, some processing of raw materials, the introduction of electricity, waterworks, telephones, and other public utilities, and the beginnings of efforts to produce supplies for these new activities." End quote. Brazil was a particular sphere of Rothschild exploitation from the 1820s onwards, with the coffee trade forming an important aspect of their involvement. Rapidly following the aforementioned 1851 war loan came the apparent need to finance the rapid growth of the country's railway network, which sparked a £1.8 million loan from the Rothschilds. Quote, "It was just the beginning of an exceptionally monogamous financial relationship between the Brazilian government and the London House, which, between 1852 and 1914 generated bond issues worth no less than £142 million. Plainly, the Rothschilds had substantial financial leverage over Brazil. End quote. That's from Ferguson. During the First World War, the US ambassador in Brazil commented that, quote, the Rothschilds have so mortgaged Brazil's financial future that they will place every obstacle in the way of her entering into banking relations with any other house other than their own, end quote. The centralising of economic and political power suits the interests of global capitalists like the Rothschilds, and so they were enthusiastic builders of what has been variously called the common market, the EEC and the EU. Guy de Rothschild became known as EEC Banker Rothschild, and the family was behind the plan for a new transnational currency called the Eurco, European Composite Unit, based on the values of nine major European currencies, the forerunner of the later ECU and now the Euro. In their drive for globalisation, the Rothschilds have, among very many activities, developed the Euro bond market, raised millions for the Inter-American Development Bank, arranged euro-dollar bond issues for Japanese companies, and floated loans for the Philippines and South Korea. Ferguson comments that the Rothschilds have always had a vested financial interest in, quote, the continuation and expansion of a global economic system in which capital, goods, and indeed people could move as freely and as securely as possible, end quote.